Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, powering the internet. As the Internet of Things evolves and more devices are connected to the internet, what does that mean for our energy system? Will we have the power we need to bring the 4 billion people who don't have internet online? And what does this mean for countries' efforts to expand electricity? Joining me to discuss this is Nalmini Rubin, Vice President of Tetra Tech, a global engineering and consulting company. Prior to that, she worked on the U.S. House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Nalmini, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you've got this blog out, Without Energy, the Internet is Just a Black Hole, Creating Energy Solutions for Information and Communications Technology. And we'll link to this blog in the show notes. It's on the Alliance for Affordable Internet's website, and your company is a member of that alliance. At a high level, what is the relationship between the internet grid and the energy grid?
The internet is completely powered by energy. So without energy, we cannot have the internet at all. So they're completely linked. If we don't have connectivity to electricity, we can simply not have connectivity to the internet.
And to what extent are the grids intertwined? And as the internet developed, was it, you know, did we keep that in mind that we have this energy grid and that there's a lot of shared infrastructure? Was that part of the plan, or was the internet merely just using the electricity that was already there and people didn't really foresee how quickly this would develop?
It's the latter. People haven't integrated internet and electricity enough. There's actually a technology that would allow you to put internet on electricity wires, but it's not used commonly. And shared infrastructure, which is really what we should be doing, so that you're saving money and saving the environment by sharing the towers or sharing the piping that goes underneath roads for electricity or the internet, that hasn't happened enough. So the Chairman Rice wrote the Digital Gap Act, which promotes that idea that when the U.S. funds development projects that are related to infrastructure, that they work with the private sector to see if there's some synergy between the different types of infrastructure.
So in your blog, you mentioned that there are 4 billion people currently without internet and about 1 billion people worldwide without electricity. Now, this is not the most sophisticated observation, but it sounds like electricity's way ahead, that people are much more likely to have electricity than they are to have internet access. So is there really a problem if the electricity's so far ahead? Isn't that kind of like a down payment for the internet, and it's going to take a while for the internet to catch up to that 1 billion number? Or is there actually a shortage that is coming on the horizon?
I think we need to be in a rush to get those 4 billion on and not say, oh, well, it'll take time, because electricity, it's the electromagnetic platform of the industrial age, and internet is the electromagnetic platform of the information age. And if we want to make sure that we bring all people on the planet along into modern society and the modern economy, we really need to pay attention to both. And we may not have the right solutions on tap on electricity to really achieve the future we want on the internet. That's because we are going to need a lot more power for the internet. Right now, 10% of all electricity is used for ICT, information communications technology. And we're seeing more and more people use more data. And that's going to require more energy to store that at data centers and use more devices that you will need to be charged. So you're going to need more data for these typical uses. But if we think of the future, where we have things like self-driving cars that are going to create as much data in one day as you and I have collected in a lifetime, we're going to really need to think through how we make sure we have enough energy to support those systems.
And you mentioned that the rise of the Internet of Things, you know, I always joke that it's like internet-connected coffee makers, but there are obviously much more important things than that. That means that data power consumption is going to triple in the next decade. Where is this demand coming from? You mentioned that there are kind of like four parts to the demand of electricity for the internet.
Right. So the four parts are data centers, where we're storing the data, the wireless networks, where the data is moving through and connecting people, the actual devices we plug into the wall, and the energy that's used to make those devices.
Right. So the factories that are making the iPhones, you got to plug the iPhone into the wall, then you've got to make a phone call with the iPhone, and then all of those activities put a demand on the grid. Now, computing costs are going down. Is that actually a problem for energy? Because as it gets cheaper and cheaper to store data and to build wireless networks, et cetera, that just means that people are going to want to build more of those things and they're going to use more electricity. So is there a disconnect between the demand for energy and the ability of governments, private sector to provide that energy?
There's definitely an increasing demand for energy because of the internet. People want to use it, but they also want to use energy for a whole lot of other things, right? They want it at their hospitals, they want it at their schools or at their homes. So we're going to just generally see an increasing demand for energy. And it's not necessarily a disconnect, but it's certainly a challenge for governments around the world to figure out what is the best way to provide that energy, and how can people afford energy that fits their environmental needs.
And my favorite line in your blog, of course, I'm going to ask you about this, is energy is like a kale salad. If it's just kale, it doesn't taste good. You have to mix it up. Now, I'm not a fan of kale, even if you mix a bunch of stuff in it. But what do you mean by this analogy that energy is like kale?
Well, people want to like say their energy solution is the right solution, right? Like it has to be all this type of renewable energy. And in it just doesn't work, right? There has to be a mix of different types of energy, whether that's natural gas or solar or hydro or wind or coal. Like there has to be some sort of mix in order to provide the amount of energy that's needed on our planet.
And to your point, you mentioned in your blog that Google has said that neither the wind nor the sun are constantly available resources. They come and go with the weather. So is that essentially the issue, is that if you rely on one source of energy and that source of energy craps out, then you've got a serious problem for the internet?
Absolutely. Because we don't have the technologies yet to make renewable work 100% of the time, right? We don't have enough battery storage to make that work. We don't have things that sometimes will work at night, right? Like solar just doesn't work at night. So we need to, until the technology catches up to where we want to go, we're just unable to use just renewables.
And speaking of catching up the technology, this is something that your company Tetra Tech is working on. And, you know, when I think about the current electricity grid, I think of it as very old and clunky and not necessarily next generation. But when I see all these news stories about wind and renewable, and that seems very high tech, is that essentially the challenge, is that you have an old system that was not designed for anything other than really fossil fuels and like the traditional energy sources. And then you've got these new energy sources. And while the technology might be there, it's hard to integrate. So what is Tetra Tech doing to take those new technologies and integrate them into old systems?
We work on both the generation side, the new technology side, and the distribution side. So it's helping work with policymakers to make sure that it's actually allowed to bring the solar onto the grid, or sometimes we work with countries to make sure that they're not unnecessarily restraining solar, right? Some countries say you can only use solar to the grid, which may not make sense if you want a contained cybersecurity system, a microgrid. So we work on the policy reforms that allow for flexibility. We also work with countries to allow them to find the best solutions for their existing system. So sometimes it is upgrading their grid and the technology around it. Sometimes it's actually just helping people do infrastructure work. Sometimes it's doing transaction advice. You want the private sector to come in and they might not know how to best interact with the government, and there might be solutions there. So we kind of do a mix of things depending on the country. We work in countries around the world. So every country is different like, so our solutions for Malawi might be very different than our solutions in the U.S.
So when you mentioned that there are sometimes there are policies on the books that might hinder the rollout of renewable, like you mentioned that sometimes they require the renewable to be attached to the grid, even if it might make sense to have this self-contained mm-hmm. system, which is interesting, right? You could imagine that someone just builds a data center in the middle of nowhere and they want to use solar there, and it wouldn't make sense to require them to attach it to the grid because the grid's not there. Why are these policies in place? So, you know, a lot of times I have guests come on and they talk about all these great things that sound extremely common sense. And I've just got to wonder, why hasn't every government just jumped at the opportunity to remove barriers to energy deployment? Is there an incumbency protection there? Are the local fossil fuel industries basically trying to prevent competition from renewable energy? Or is this just an educational thing where the policymakers just don't know that their policies are preventing progress? I mean, what do you see as the kind of like the reason that we haven't seen more progress on the policy front?
I think that people want to do well. They want their countries to do well, and I think a lot of the slowness in having policy reform is creating a critical mass to make change. Politicians don't just make policy reforms because they're purely the right idea. They need.
That'd be nice. But yeah.
Right. Like there's a political aspect to it, and so their goal is to do what their people want, and so sometimes it takes a while to do the education, to do the coalition building, to identify the problem, and then figure out what the solution is, and then get the policies actually voted on and changed. Democracies can be slow, but they're responsive. And so I think we need to sort of be patient with them, but also just make it really easy for countries to know what the right answers are so they don't have to recreate the wheel all the time.
And it seems like we've got a little bit of a problem in that the internet does put a massive strain on the energy grid. And you have mentioned that there are other uses for energy that need to be met, whether it's a hospital or just keeping the lights on, or maybe air conditioning in some extremely hot places like today. It's really hot in DC, right? Yeah. But is it the case that the internet is a problem for energy? Or, I mean, we've got this explosion of technological innovation. The internet certainly is at the center of that. Could the internet actually help improve our energy system, make more energy available, or is it really just a strain on the system and we have to meet it because the internet's so great and we love it? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of how much the internet could be part of a solution to an energy crunch.
It is part of the demand, and it's also part of the solution. So what's really exciting is we're looking at projects in Africa where people are using their cell phones to pay for renewable energy on their homes. So instead of buying and using a lot of their money on a big solar home system, they can pay for their energy as they use it using their phone. And it's a really interesting example of how you're using the internet to facilitate, responsible energy use. And you'll see that more and more where people are using the internet to structure different uses of energy, like O-Power, right? Like they're using the internet to create competition between people so that they can reduce their energy use and become more efficient. While it might be part of the demand, it definitely can be part of the solution as we look forward.
And you've mentioned that there are energy ministers across the world that want to leapfrog current technology. We've talked about that in the wireless sense, where rather than initially build out a wireline network, some countries will just say, let's just jump to 5G because, why go through all the motions that the Western countries did when the new technology has arrived? So the concept of leapfrogging I can handle, but what does it mean to leapfrog technology in the context that we're discussing of this internet and energy? And what do policymakers hope to accomplish? And what exactly are they skipping? I mean, when you say you're leapfrogging, you imply that you're skipping some type of development that maybe happened in the Western world. So what does that mean?
So I think leapfrogging would be exactly like not doing it exactly the same way that we did in the U.S. and in Europe with the fixed lines that are underground. You know, thinking about new ways to have connectivity, whether it's, what Facebook's thinking about with planes that are
hot air balloons, Google,
yeah,
right?
Google's balloon. Those are different technologies. Like the internet over the energy lines is another one. Leapfrogging in ways that might be not even never considered here, right? So where you work with small home businesses to sell internet kiosks, just like they sell mobile phone minutes, using that on for internet and kind of building economic growth that way, and helping small entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs kind of improve their quality of life. So there are definitely different things but I think that we're not totally there yet. Like we might be at the beginning of a potential leapfrog moment, where people in the developing world are totally recognizing the importance of the internet, and they want it, and they want to figure out how to get it. And so we might be at that moment where they're about to come up with some exciting solutions that we might not have even conceived of.
And when we're giving kind of homework for policymakers to help achieve this very noble goal of bringing people online, I think no matter what your politics are, you can get behind that goal. And that's one of the most bipartisan things going on in the world these days, is just connectivity and deployment and getting people online. We mentioned one policy solution, which could just be as simple as ending a requirement that all renewable power be attached to a grid if it's not feasible. You mentioned the Digital Gap Act. There's other things you mentioned in your blog post, like build once. What is that all about? And how is this a policy solution that could help, increase the amount of energy as the demand for internet increases?
So the story about this is that the World Bank did a loan to Liberia and spent about $100 million on roads. And there was a staffer who suggested that they just lay pipe underneath the roads so you could connect Liberia. This is many years ago. And they estimated that the cost of wiring Liberia would have been about $700,000. And folks determined that this was a luxury. Liberia needed roads, not internet. So they didn't do it. And this was before Ebola. So you could have had Liberia wired, you could have had a life-saving tool in place that would have really helped. One of the biggest problems with the Ebola outbreak was the lack of information.
And we talked about this in the United States too, about dig once, where like when you're going to do a road project, the cost of adding that pipe to put the internet in is such a small fraction of the total road project. And if I have your numbers right, the ones you said they got a $100 million grant to build roads. It would have only been $700,000 of that $100 million to have internet, potentially. I mean, you still have to wire it.
Yeah.
But they did not make that trade-off. That sounds like a policy problem. If people are looking at those numbers and somehow come to the conclusion that it's not worth the tiny percentage added to have internet, that's less than 1%.
And now, the donors are spending millions of dollars trying to help bring Liberia internet to different parts of Liberia. And the sad part is it's like there's country after country with that example. And it's pennies on the dollar,
right?
when you're thinking about it. One of the comments that Chairman Rice got on the bill after it was introduced was from Americans from Taxpayer Reform, which said like this was a good idea for the U.S., for the developing world, but it's even a better idea for the U.S., just to your point about dig once, that it would make sense here in the U.S. And there are actually some states in the U.S. that are looking into it. San Francisco has sort of adopted that approach, but yeah, it just logically makes sense.
Yeah, and of course, it might be seen as a common sense thing in certain places, but it's really important, the work that you're doing, because if any government sits down and makes that determination without all the information, that could lead to serious problems, you mentioned with Ebola. So what other types of public-private partnerships do you think we need to get us to a better future?
I think that one of the most important things is is not just the government's getting out of the way of the private sector, but really inviting the private sector in. So when there is a plan for some sort of big project, that they announce it in a way that's easy for the private sector to get and understand where the opportunities are for a partnership. And what we did this, Tetra Tech did a project in the Philippines that was a fisheries project, and it was that we were trying to figure out how to improve the fish stock. And we found that the fishermen weren't registering because it was hard for them to go all the way to the town to register. So they would we realized that they needed, it was easier on an app to register, and then they can just measure the fish that they catch and it'd all be in the app. And it was working, and realized that we needed internet connectivity for it. So Tetra Tech, USAID, the government of the Philippines, and Microsoft did a partnership to bring super Wi-Fi using TV white space, so the part of the TV spectrum that's unused, to do super Wi-Fi in that area. And then the government of the Philippines is now thinking about piloting it across the country. And it was really important to like kind of see the opportunity and be able to invite in. But it's not always that apparent in, right, when people are doing other types of projects. And I think that most, you know, if you think about most internet connectivity types of companies, they just aren't going to know when the government's doing stuff unless, yeah, the government makes a much better effort.
Right. So that's the importance of the communication, as basic as just letting people know what's going on, so, right, that they can, you know, potentially participate. Well, I'll close out the show with this great quote from Pope Francis that you included in your blog post at a recent TED Talk. He said, "How wonderful would it be if the growth of scientific and technological innovation would come along with more equality and social inclusion?" And then you said, "Helping all 7 billion people on the planet have access to electricity and the internet, and ensuring energy is available to power that internet, is the challenge of our shared future." Well, keep up the good work. It sounds like Tetra Tech is at the center of the internet and energy situation. And thanks for joining the show. My guest has been Nilmini Rubin, Vice President of Tetra Tech, a global engineering and consulting company. Check out her blog post, which we'll link to in the show notes for today. Thanks so much for joining the show, Nilmini.
Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review, because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.